From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to this remarkable program we call Coast to Coast AM. Later tonight, oh yes, those open lines, so get ready for that. Here's what's happening. President Barack Obama's bid to renew a ban against military-style assault weapons narrowly won the backing of the Senate Judiciary Committee, and it's headed to the full Senate, where it appears certain to fail. Military-style assault weapons have been the weapon of choice in a number of recent U.S. mass shootings, including the one at an elementary school in Connecticut that killed 20 children, 6 adults on December 14th. Some polls are showing a majority of Americans back the ban, but most Senate Republicans and a number of Democrats from rural states oppose it, arguing that it would violate the constitutional right to bear arms. And many of those politicians fear the backing of that legislation could cost them re-election. Another problem, you can't believe this, Carnival Cruise Lines all screwed up these days. Another Carnival cruise ship has reported problems while at sea, becoming now the third Carnival ship in less than 2 months to experience difficulties aboard. The Carnival Legend is skipping all of its scheduled stops through the Caribbean and is heading back to Port of Tampa to arrive Sunday, moving at only 14 miles an hour. Captain Kelly Sweeney with us. Kelly, this is almost surreal.
Ahoy, George. It certainly is. And as you pointed out, they've had some serious safety violations in the last month or two. And a lot of people don't know that our U.S. Coast Guard has investigated 90 incidents, what are called marine casualties in the business, onboard Carnival cruise ships in the last 5 years, even though the Coast Guard is not in charge of safety on these vessels because they're registered in foreign countries. Now, there was something that came out today that I think we should pass on to the listeners as well. Carnival Cruise Line announced today that they made $37 million in just the first quarter of this year. And in my opinion, if they don't use some of that money to improve the preventive maintenance and repair program on their vessels, incidents like these are just going to continue to happen and put more and more passengers at risk.
You're right, Kelly. Not only that, their sales are going to start plummeting. I mean, I don't dabble much in the stock market. This is one stock I'd consider selling short. Jeez.
Well, I tell you, George, stocks are one thing, but lives are another. And as a mariner and as somebody who's been in charge of a vessel and lives and somebody who cares very deeply about marine safety, to me it's unacceptable that these kind of things are happening. They really need to get their act together, in my opinion. And, you know, I recommend all the Coast listeners, all the Coast family here, you know, if you're considering going on a cruise, think twice about who you're going to choose to go on the cruise on. And I recommend to my family, consider going on an American ship with American crews. At least they'll be following U.S. maritime safety laws.
Oh, you're absolutely right. Thank you, Kelly. Have a good weekend. You might remember the movie Titanic, right? Remember right toward the end, they had a group of people, musicians, playing on the deck as the ship sank and it was going down? Well, they found the violin of one of those guys, a rosewood violin played by bandmaster Wallace Hartley, on the Titanic deck as the ship sank, has been confirmed as authentic by investigators, could soon be brought to auction. It's worth six figures and likely will be sold in the near future. For now, it will be exhibited in England. The instrument was found inside a leather case engraved with Hartley's initials, strapped to his body. Former Federal Reserve Chairman Alan Greenspan, remember him? Well, he said that even with the record high stock prices, investors don't need to worry about irrational exuberance at this time. In fact, he says, in his view, stocks are still significantly undervalued. A Metro Detroit elementary school is asking students to simply leave their backpacks at home after bed bugs were found in the school. Parents of students at the Bernice McDowell Elementary School in Taylor received a note earlier this week that bedbugs were found inside the school and inside a textbook, and they think some kid brought it to the school. An incredible story of a 5-million-year-old saber-toothed cat fossil discovered in Florida. It's an unbelievable story. You'll find it at coasttocoastam.com. What's happening in the skies these days? Let's check in with Peter Davenport from the National UFO Reporting Center. What's the latest, Peter?
Good evening, George, and thanks for having me on again so soon tonight. some interesting breaking news, some interesting, very interesting sightings across the United States just tonight within recent hours. But with the permission of your engineer, I've been allowed to take a minute to talk about a very tragic accident that happened up here on Monday of this week, very close to the city of Harrington, Washington, where I reside. At about 8:48 Monday morning, the 11th of March, a U.S. Navy EA-6B based at Whidbey Island Naval Air Station tragically crashed out here in a wheat field west of the town I live in. And I just thought I'd take a moment to call this to the attention of the coast-to-coast listeners and to extend our condolences, sincere condolences, to the families and loved ones of those brave aviators. We have a lot of low flights over our county because of the nature of the territory out here, and we look upon those people as good neighbors and welcome guests, and it just placed a pall over the county of Lincoln after this accident, and I just wanted to extend those condolences to the families and loved ones, and thank you for allowing me to do that, George.
Sure thing, absolutely.
Three very interesting sightings just tonight. Clinton, Tennessee, Chattanooga, Tennessee. Again, orange fireballs, George. Have no idea what they are. They're cropping up everywhere. They're being reported from California, New York, Iowa, Florida. A lot of sightings down in Florida. And tonight we just got a very interesting report of a craft that was seen hovering in the night sky over Genesee County, Michigan. That's very close there. That's where Flint, Michigan is, down in the southeast corner. A lot of interesting reports. Should have the website updated very soon. I've got some serious computer problems here that I haven't resolved yet, but UFOCenter.com will be updated very soon. And breaking news, this is probably the most important report tonight that I will make, and that is it appears that we have some very, very credible photographs of some aliens. I won't take the time tonight to talk about them until we've documented the photos, but in a word, they look to be about 10 or 12 inches high. They're showing up in photographs. As you know, George, I'm very, very conservative in what I say.
Yes, you are.
The information I release. I would not even make this comment if I were not really intrigued by the photographs that I've received from three seemingly independent sources. We'll be posting those photos in the near future once I get a new computer and get rolling here. So,
all right, you let us know when it's ready to go, Peter. We'd love to take a look at those.
Will do.
Okay.
Thank
you,
George.
My friend. Thank you, Peter. Peter's website, UFOCenter.com. Bill Wark IV, the only man in America who was apparently fired from his job because he reported a UFO on his company CB Radio. 2 days later, Bill was simply fired from his job and had his truck and tools taken away from him without any due process of law, and they say with the help of the local sheriff. Bill was not the kind of guy who you'd want to pick a fight with, and he's been championing the UFO cause since we broke the story here on the 10-year anniversary of the Phoenix Lights back in 1997. That happened. 3 days after Bill's incredible Phoenix Lights interview, former Arizona Governor Fife Symington finally admitted seeing a huge UFO, vindicating a lot of Bill's research and adding a whole new layer of intrigue to this amazing story. And we have Bill back tonight for a few hours, and we'll check in with him in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Hey, a small pocket-sized radio, great reception, can be a struggle to find in your local store. I mean, you can wander up and down the aisles and never find it. But you don't have to worry about doing that because our friends at C. Crane have a brand new pocket radio that I want to tell you about. It's the brand new CC Pocket AM and FM and Weather Alert Radio. The new CC Pocket gets great reception for its size. It's small enough to fit truly in your pocket. You can keep it by your pillow. Do whatever you want with it. And it's only $59.95. The CC Pocket runs with a couple AA batteries. It includes a belt clip, earbuds, a clock alarm, sleep timer, built-in speakers. It's really cool. You can call C Crane now to order the brand new CC Pocket for just $59.95. That's it at 1-800-522-8863. That's 1-800-522-8863. And you can also visit online, very safe and secure, Take a look at all the great radios that they have at ccrane.com. And welcome back to Coast, Bill Warwick with us, of course. And for 10 years plus, Bill has been researching and investigating his own personal UFO experiences. I just mentioned to you what happened to him when he reported a UFO while working for his company. And Bill, of course, is with us now. Bill, what have you been up to? What are you working on these days?
Well, we got a couple projects going on. Been working with James Fox, who, as you all know, is the one of the videographers that was able to capture the actual Symington testimony of Governor Fife Symington sort of coming out of the closet and admitting that he had seen a UFO on March 13th, 1997. And I don't know if you know that or if it's been reported, but James has a new movie that he's coming out with, and he has kind of a contest going on that's giving away $100,000 to the best UFO footage that that's submitted to them. So I think that's a great thing for what we're trying to do and trying to get some of this information out there. Hopefully that'll entice some people to come forward with some stuff that might have been holding on to for a while. That would be myself included, by the way. So
that's exciting.
So that's about it. Just keeping on going on with you know, my businesses and this as a personal side thing. So it's all good.
We got to get Peter Davenport to get those pictures of those aliens you just reported on.
And, yeah, was he talking about they were 10 inches tall, or they?
Yeah, little ones, real little teeny ones, real teeny ones.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that. So I'm sure he meant that they were in some kind of you know, perspective point of view, but we'll see.
All right, so, you know, since we all last chatted, you've been doing some incredible investigating. Tell me about this footage you've got of a military airplane.
Yeah, actually, that James's contest kind of made me want to come out and dig this out of the archive, so to speak. We actually had some footage from back in 2007 that we got here in Suffolk, and there's an unbelievable kind of story attached to this, because the footage that we captured was actually given to UFO hunters. It's a long story. It was kind of done behind my back. And they aired the footage, but they didn't analyze it. And so while they were getting ready to air the footage, and I had no idea that they were getting ready to air the footage, I was going through every single frame of the video, and I had like about, I don't know, probably something like an hour and a half of footage to go through, you know, broken up into these sections. So anyway, long story short, out of an hour and a half and maybe a month and a half of rendering on a laptop, which back in 2007 was almost impossible, I found this one sequence where, and I have to give you a little background first, this witness, Terrell, he's been on national TV, that I was working with in Suffolk. I gave him the camera to go out and get this footage for UFOEyewitness.com at the time. And he went out on Halloween night in 2007, and he got some incredible footage. And the footage that he got, in particular, that we have, you know, giving you guys copies of, actually, was of a military jet of some kind that was making passes around an object that was hovering up in the horizon, about 20 degrees above the horizon. And what happened was Terrell had his camera with him, and he missed the first time because, you know, he was kind of observing what was going on. So he missed the first pass, but he got the camera off for the second pass. And what he captured was this red light. You see the red light coming in, that's clearly the jet. And he's narrating everything as it's happening. He's saying, you know, this the first jet just went around, and getting ready to see the second jet. You know, he's going to make another pass around this thing. That's what they've been doing, you know, blah, 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 blah. So he's... How do you, if it was fate, how could he predict what the jet was going to do? Right?
That's a good point.
Number one, right? So just right off the bat, you know this isn't a fake scene, so to speak. Number two, the plane almost comes so close to this object, it looks like it almost hits it or collides it with it. And then just like he describes it, it kind of curls away. Now, if you look at it at full speed and you don't blow it up, and you don't slow it down, and you don't deinterlace the, you know, it's an AVI, so you have to deinterlace it, and then do a frame blend to bring the frames back together the way they're supposed to be, you're not going to see anything. So that's what I did, and when you do that, what you get is this sequence where it looks like there's an orb that is coming around the side of this boomerang-shaped craft that's floating there in the sky, and when it connects to the bottom of some kind of gondola that's attached to the bottom of this thing, it lights up like a plasma discharge or something, and then
as the energy source sort of starts to die down, then you start to see the lights blink out one by one, right until you see the last light itself, and it looks like it's almost a triangle.
Where did the military plane go after that?
There was a sequence of videos before and after that, and I think he went to his dad's house after that. So I'm not really sure. I think basically this is the end of that particular piece of footage. And then he got in his car and I think he went to his dad's house. I think he was a little freaked out, to be honest with you, because he actually called me the night that he had taken this footage and was talking to me about it. And he was pretty, that's the only time he ever called me and said, I'm actually looking at real footage before.
And, you know, nowadays, Bill, with so many drones out there, we really don't know the difference. But I would guess that military jets aren't chasing drones, are they?
Well, no, not at all. Of course not. And really, there's no drones that I know of that's that big that could just be floating there and then have other smaller drones attached to it. You know, we don't have anti-gravity, you know what I'm saying? We have regular drones that fly like regular planes. It's not, you know what I mean? And this thing had to have been really relatively big because he zooms in and out back and forth a couple of times. And I think it's 18 times zoom on that particular camera. And when you're zoomed out that far back, and then you zoom in and you see the perspective between the two, you know this thing's got to be pretty far out the distance, a mile or two, and it's got to be pretty damn big in order to give that kind of an image, you know what I mean?
And was he in awe when he shot it?
He couldn't see it.
Oh, he was just pointing.
When we looked at the video, you can't see it. It happens so fast, it's in the blink of an eye. You have to slow it down to frame by frame by frame by frame by frame if you're going to be able to see it at all. So he didn't even know it was there.
Okay,
and UFO hunters didn't know it was there because they really didn't do an analysis of it. I mean, they really didn't.
And, of course, with UFO hunters, they took it aired it. You didn't know about it. Were you upset about that?
Yeah, a little bit. I was supposed just to get a co-production credit is what it was supposed to boil down to. I was like, fine, you can take it. You've already got it. You're going to use it. But anyway, that's a long story. It's neither here nor there. Bottom line is I still got the footage. I still have the copyright, and I can still use it. And that's what we're doing now. So maybe I'll get the last laugh.
Well, there's a lot of different things out there in the world of the UFOs, and maybe this will rank way up there with some of them, huh?
You know, things have a way of like going and coming. It's really funny. Like things kind of die down for a while, and then people get interested again, and then you know what I mean? The public conscience, you know what I mean?
You have tied in. Now this is an incredible connection here, but tell me why. You've tied in UFOs with the Knights Templar.
Yeah.
How did you get that connection?
Well, this is a great story. We were coming back from New Mexico. We just finished editing the Phoenix Incident, which is the DVD we won the award for, which you can get on Amazon.com. And we were coming back from New Mexico, and I was with my Native American friends, Linda and Guillermo, and they're like, you know, big-time Aztec, dancers, and, you know, just they're connected to the Mayan elders down, and they help to repurchase sacred sites, and they're just like these incredible people that I've come to know over many years, and they know all about this, you know, what happened to me, because obviously I went to them and said, you know, what I experienced fit into your beliefs or your understanding of history, you know what I mean? So that's how the conversation started with them. This is going back to, actually, Joshua Tree is where I met those guys, back in, you know, when you were doing your speech over there. And
right,
I was up there
okay,
doing,
that was a couple
doing
of years.
Ceremonies with them with the dead owl, right?
All right, okay, that was
and, so anyway, I'm about to get on the plane, and Guillermo pulls me aside, and I packed everything, you know, and it was ready. And he pulls me aside, and he hands me this huge drum, and you know, it's kind of hard to get on the plane when you got like, you know, all this stuff, and he hands you this huge drum. I said, well, what are you giving me this for? You know, it's going to be really difficult to get on the plane. And he said, no, I want you to draw in your mind and on this drum a picture of what you saw, meaning the boomerang in Norfolk. Mm-hmm. Flying from Norfolk to Phoenix. And I'm like, do you want me to do this when I get home or do you want me to do it on the plane? So I was like, all right, fine, I'll do it. And we shook hands and all that stuff. And I knew he was kind of trying to tell me something, but I really didn't know what it was. Long story short, you know, fast forward like a month and a half, 2 months later, I'm still trying to figure out, you know, get this blank drum on my wall, you know, what I'm supposed to really paint to it.
Yeah.
And then suddenly it dawned on me that what he was trying to tell me and I visualized it was the boomerang on the shield. In other words, it wasn't a drum, it was a shield. Because what happened is one of my kids picked it up and started fighting with it, and I used it as a shield. So, and I called, and I figured it out. He was trying to tell me that the shield symbol was the boomerang symbol on the shield.
The same as the Templar shield you're talking about.
Well, wait, this is really good. All right. If you go back far enough and you start reading about the history of chivalry and stuff like that, what I found was that there was a book that was written called Toronto Block. And it's a Catalan book, and English literature majors right now are going crazy right now because no one's ever talked about this book unless you're an English literature major, right? But in this book, it talks about Count William of Warwick. Of course, that's my name. And this is a 14th century manuscript, by the way. And it tells the story of how Count William of Warwick taught this other knight, and the knight's name was Tyrant LeBlanc.
All right, hold on for a second, Bill. We're going to take this quick break and come right back, and you can tell us this tie-in with the Templars. We'll be right back on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. Bill Warwick with us. Bill, let's get into the Knight Templars connection here with this boomerang UFOs. Go. You were talking about some kind of a shield look. Go ahead.
Yeah. I concurrent with what Guillermo had told me in figuring out that he was trying to tell me to look for boomerangs on shields, which of course meant coats of arms, right? I was concurrently actually doing some research into genealogy and stuff like that, and I come across this book called Tirant le Blanc. It's one of the first novels ever written. It's been written in actually a language called Catalan, which is on the southern coast of Spain. At any rate, the Count William of Warwick was credited with inventing what we today call chivalry, and there were actually laws and codes that they had written down, and the first like quarter of the book was like pretty much, which no one sees because it's been taken out of the current books, is it was this whole code of chivalry that he's credited with, and he teaches Tyrant. Anyway, so the long story short is I made the connection, okay, well, chivalry, where do we get the word chevron from? We get it from chivalry, right? And chevron, of course, means boomerang. And the whole military orders are based on the symbol of the boomerang, right? The rank.
So are you saying that the boomerang shaped UFO was around during that time period?
Absolutely. Before that, long before that, thousands of years. Yes. And I can give you evidence of it all over the world, including Guatemala. All right, let me go on. Right. Now, the Templar cipher. The Templars had their own cipher. And it was made up of two basic characters, and one was the shape of an L, or what we call lambda, or it's just like it's a right-hand triangle, okay? Or you could call it like a square. In contracting, if you don't know what a square is, it's a piece of wood or a piece of metal that you make into a 90-degree angle and use that to, it's called a tri-square. You put it up against something and you tell if it's 90-degree angle. So that's
it's like,
the first
it's like
thing,
a template symbol. Almost, doesn't it?
Yeah, and so that's the symbol that they used. The second symbol was not a square. It was a boomerang. It was a chevron. And they used those two symbols, and they changed the orientation of the symbol, you know, left, right, up, down, left, right, dot in the middle, no dot in the middle. And guess what the dot represented? The orbs.
All right.
That's the Templar cipher. So
you're not going to get any argument from me that these are...
No. I'm just giving everybody a chance to pause for a moment and kind of like let that sink in for a minute, because I'm going to be throwing a lot of stuff at you real quick here. You know, 10 years worth of work in a couple of minutes, it's going to come quick. So not only is it the Templar cipher, but if you go further back in time, I'll give you another example. One of the mystery pieces of archaeology, the Phaistos stone from Phaistos, where they've got the characters. And if you look on that, on both sides of that, you see one of the most prominent characters is a boomerang. It's not a square. If it was a square, it would be at a 90-degree angle.
Are we still seeing, you know, other than the episode where your friend was videotaping the aircraft and possibly the boomerang, I mean, are we still seeing that shape show up?
You know, it's sporadic. The thing about the boomerangs is they come and they're here for a while, and there's a flap, and you get a whole bunch of, you know, like a rash of sightings and calls about them. I mean, and then they're gone. I mean, this has been going on since at least the Hudson Valley sightings, but then you can maybe even go further back to the Lubbock Light sightings, which were in a boomerang shape, too. So, you know, I mean, that's just recent history. You know what I mean? I mean, that's just the stuff that we can kind of, you know, go back at the documentation, like NICAP, NICAP's documentation and stuff like that, and say, okay, you know, look at the formations, you know, because you have basic descriptions of everything, right? So.
And they're huge, aren't they?
Oh, typically they're just described as massive. I mean, massive. Now, do you have the pick? We were able to get that pick of the boomerang.
I think we've got them. Sean's got them up there.
Now,
they came in late.
You know what the Knights, you know what the Knights Templar symbol is? Look at that light. Does that not look like the Knights Templar symbol?
Well, it's very close.
Well, I called it a clover leaf, but really, if you were in medieval times and you just saw that light up and not the rest of the craft, like basically what we see in this picture, you know, would that not be the symbol that we see in the Knights Templar? And it is and it isn't. Now we have to go back a little bit further in time. So we talked about the Feistosome. We talked about the Templar cipher. Here's one I'm going to throw at you. Have you seen the pictures of the so-called Tomb of Jesus?
No.
Well, there's a picture of it. Supposedly they found the tomb of the family of Jesus. Excuse me. That's what I meant to say.
Family. Yeah, not Jesus.
Exactly.
If we found that tomb, that would be a home run.
Well, that's another story for another day. We'll get to that another day. This particular tomb has a boomerang shape over the porthole, over the entrance, and a small circle right below it. That is the symbol of this Templar cipher. It is also a boomerang with a probe below it.
So what you're saying, though, is you're concluding that these objects have been around for a long time.
Absolutely. I think these go back to Enki and Enlil. I think that the symbol of the two boomerangs crossing, is the sign of Enlil and Enki, of the two brothers ending the war between each other and basically bringing peace on Earth. And supposedly, according to the Mayans, this is when the Pleiadians got involved and started getting involved with us and trying to make us, you know, not kill each other so much.
Bill, you've been doing a lot of work, and I've got to ask you about this, about a crashed vehicle that's crashed into a farm in Virginia. Tell me about this debris you've been testing. What's going
on?
Well,
actually, what it is, it wasn't actually a vehicle, and I always have to be careful when I give a description of it. It's a small disc, and what the witness, and we have all the witness testimony videotaped and everything. What he said was that he was out in his land. He's got some land out in Virginia, and there's a lot of farmland out here. He saw these two, you know, they look like satellites in the sky, look like they collided or came together. And then went apart, and when they came together or collided, you know, he doesn't know if they collided or not. It looked like they collided, he said, but no, they were so high up in the sky, he couldn't really tell. And when they came together, something was ejected from one of them or came off one of them or whatever and fell on his farmland, and it just went like, you know, and he didn't really see where it went or anything like that, and he really didn't think anything more of it. We have all this testimony on our website or through the links on our Coast to Coast would be the best way to find it. And so the couple days goes by, and he's out there with his dog, you know, on his land, and his dog starts digging out at this hole, this like little crater that was in the soft soil. It's like soft sandy soil.
Wet. Gotta love those animals. They know everything, don't they?
Well, and he had a huge, what are they called, pit bull, or just he bit him like five times. Anyway, long story short, so this dog digs out this thing, and he goes over and digs out and ends up in these two hockey puck sized little discs. And actually, I met this guy because he had heard our interview that we did 10 years ago, and he contacted me. This goes back to 2007. And I was like, all right, sure, you have crash discs on your land. You want me to come see it, blah, 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 whatever. And this went on for 2 or 3 months. And finally, he came down here because he was kind of far away. And he showed me these things. And I'm thinking, you know, the pictures he showed me before are horrible. And I'm looking at this thing in person. I'm going, and I have some background with mechanical engineering. I have a company called Innovative Nanotechnology Solutions. And I know a lot about some high-tech stuff. Let's just put it that way. And in order to create what he had given me, it's actually either a gallium or a germanic, maybe gallium arsenide, something like that. It's a superconductor. It looks to me like a superconductor. It's green, dark green. It's crystalline, and it has a ceramic vein coating around the outside. Just picture a hockey puck, and around the rim it has a ceramic coating The interior of the whole thing is green. And then on the bottom and the top of it, it's got some kind of really, really thin metal, and it doesn't tarnish or anything. And it's not radioactive because I checked that.
All right.
Yeah, and I have a sample that can be tested, and he has the full puck.
How expensive is that to test something?
Well, here's the thing. You have to grow it. You can't just make it. You have to grow these crystals in a petri dish. So
does that take time?
Time, money, expertise, and then how do you get the ceramic matrix to infuse in with the? I mean, I deal with this on a daily basis. It's like there's some challenges there. You know what I mean? And he was convinced that it was, you know, part of some type of, you know, UFO propulsion unit or spacecraft propulsion or something.
I had this. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I don't mean. In fact, on the sides of the full disc that he had the full disc, one full disc basically intact, and then there was a piece of a disc. And I cut the piece of a disc in half, and he has one half, and I have one half, and he has the full disc. Well, on the full disc, you can see where it looked like something had burned. Like these weren't a tube; these were clearly stacked, one on top of the other. That's why they have the metallic coating, one on the side, and one on the other side, so that they were like batteries, basically. But they're not batteries. They're not magnetic. They're not, at least I don't have superconducting fluid. I don't have the ability to put them into that to find out if they have any of those abilities. And it's not something you want to try. Just mess around with them, bat, you know what I mean?
Right.
So I'm working with James Fox. Hopefully either through him or through Kickstarter.com we'll be able to get some money to actually get this thing tested. Because if it does end up being something that they've never seen before, or some kind of new alloy, or, you know, it could really be something big. And
oh, yeah. Really, I mean, and you have to find out. Yeah, you have to.
Well, it either is something or it isn't something, but it's definitely something. I can't explain it. And I've had this on the internet for like maybe 4 or 5 years, and there's been a couple of explanations that came through. One guy said that it could be some kind of low radioactive thermoelectric generator for a Soviet satellite. But the witness said that he saw two objects come together and then kind of collide, and then these came out. So if two satellites collided, I would think that we would see they wouldn't. He said they flew off, basically. So if two things collide in space, they just don't kind of fly off under their own power. They like make a big, huge fireball and come crashing down to Earth. You know what I mean?
Well, and you won't know until you test it.
No, we won't know until he tests it, but certainly it's in terms of, I mean, you can get all the video footage you want, but at the end of the day, the only thing that's going to get you on the Today Show is if, you know, you've got scientific proof of something. You know what I mean?
Well, so we've got a new pope. Lots of people are talking about that and spirituality, but they're also talking about the Vatican, talking about the possibility of ET life, which has been ongoing now for a couple of years.
Yeah.
Have you looked at the possibility of sightings at Fanaba, Lourdes, where people said they saw this object come down? Many said it was the sun. I still have a problem believing that.
Well, here's the deal. Here's where all this kind of ties in, okay? Because going back to the Templars and Jesus and all this, there's a connection to these boomerangs that goes all the way back even before Jesus. So if we just start with the presumption that there's a group, okay, of families, call them the Grail families because that's what they are, and that these Grail families, who were, you know, basically descendants of Mary, who was a sister of Isis, she was basically the high priestess of Isis, and Jesus, who would have been the Pharaoh, basically, right? Because remember where they went, and a lot of people are going to freak out when I say this, you know, there's no proof of it, but it's all there. They went to Egypt.
Well, a lot of people think that.
Yeah, well, where do you go when you go in trouble? It says it right there in the book. And then he disappears for 25 years. Well, come on, guys, really? You know, he was the King of Kings. Well, the King of Kings means he was the Pharaoh, and he was an emperor. There's a lot of evidence and that he was Cleopatra's, basically, grandson. Cleopatra faked her death so that her children wouldn't be killed or be a part of all that. So when he was called King of Kings, that's why he said, you know, you call me the King of Kings. You know what I'm saying? That's why everyone freaked out and didn't know what to do with him, because he really was. He would have been the Pharaoh of Egypt, and he would have been the emperor of, you know what I mean?
Okay, but let's get back to Fatima.
Sorry. So wait a minute. So when you, the first thing that I learned was that the name of these families had a, they didn't just have a name, they had a symbol, and their symbol was the bear. So King Arthur, Arthur is Welsh, and that means bear. But also back in those days was Artenu, Arcolchurn, and Caratacus and Arviragus, and they were different names from different tribes for the same person. That was Jesus, who lived, and his symbol was the bear. So they got the King Arthur stories of the 5th century bear families mixed up with the 1st century bear families. I think they did that on purpose so that they would know that the King Arthur stories are really about Jesus and the 12 apostles, which obviously it is, you know, but they failed it in the story so that we didn't really see the connection between anything. And also, too, if you go back far enough, you'll find that the connection between the bear and Fatima in Lourdes, and actually Rennes-le-Château, the mystery of Rennes-le-Château, there's a bear connection there, too. And the bear connection is really subtle, but it's definitely there. And I'll tell you what it is. Bernadette Soubirous was the young lady who apparently had seen the Virgin Mary apparitions in Lourdes. But her real name wasn't really Bernadette. That's an English translation of Bernadie. Bernadie means bear spear. So it's a bear holding a spear. The spear is the spear of Longinus. That was the spear that pierced the side of Christ. So if you go back far enough in time and you find a bear holding a spear, you know that's the lineage of Jesus Christ and Mary.
And I'm a little lost there. What's that got to do with the with your UFO research?
So Bernadette's first name was actually Bear Spear. Berenger Saunier, who came along later on in the story, in the Rennes-le-Château part of all this, his name, Berenger, means bear spear. Okay? So all of these families were related. The children of Fatima were cousins. They were all related to each other by the matriarchal lineage. So
we already know that.
Yeah, but people don't understand that they were Grail. All of these kids were Grail. They were all related.
Well, the object that apparently came down, was it the sun or was it a UFO?
Oh, the sun, how's the sun going to come down? Is it going to move out of the sky?
That's what I asked.
It has to have been a UFO. And you had so many different people that described it as not being, you know, secular people that weren't religious at all. They had doctors and lawyers and, you know, basically atheists, you know, Freemasons that all described the same thing. So it had to have been an object. It had to have been some type of craft. You know what I mean? They didn't have holograms back then. They didn't have the ability to, you know, project. You know what I mean? So it had to have been a real craft. So the question then is, what was the intent? What was the purpose? And what is the connection between that event on October 13th? And see, this is the connection. That was the day that the Templars were disbanded, October 13th, 1307. That's the connection. That's the message.
Yeah, things weren't going right for the Templars in those days.
Well, and that's because they weren't protecting the bloodline of Jesus Christ and Mary. They were the bloodline of Jesus Christ and Mary. The person who founded the Templars, his name was Bernard of Clairvaux. Bernard means bear. Every time you see B-E-R, it means bear. The new pope that was just elected, the first three letters in his last name is B-E-R. I'm telling you. There's more to this than you would ever imagine. I'm writing a book about it called The Covenant of Warwick, and I've got like 400 pages in it so far. And I mean, what we're talking about right now is just the tip of the iceberg.
You still on Facebook?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. How do people find you?
WikiLeaks UFOs.com on Facebook.
You've got a new email, too, don't you know?
Yeah, yeah. I don't think I'm going to put that on radio.
All right. You don't want people to email you if they have questions?
No, they can reach me on WikiLeaks.
Okay, simple as that?
Yeah.
All right. We will do that, Bill. And, you know, good luck on your move with Kickstarter and all these other things that you do. I'm going to come back in just a moment on Coast to Coast. This is our Friday night into Saturday morning. And, of course, that means those special open lines for you. I'll also open up a special hotline for you here on Coast to Coast AM. Now, my email, I'll give that out. That's george@coasttocoastam.com. We'll be back in a moment right here on Coast to Coast AM.